In this episode, we meet with Les Mills Asia Pacific's CEO, Ryan Hogan, who's come here on a very wet, rainy day from Canberra. And from Canberra, he is overseeing 14 countries in Australia, all across to Malaysia, Philippines, Indonesia, Singapore, Brunei, Vietnam, Thailand, Myanmar, Cambodia, Laos, Maldives, Guam, and Papua New Guinea. What a portfolio. And it's a real pleasure to have you with us here today, Ryan.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So welcome to the Move Aid podcast. An Olympian and Commonwealth Games athlete by the name of Les Mills set up a gym in Auckland, New Zealand, 50 years ago in 1968. It took 30 years of gym building and an innovative pre-choreographed barbell workout known as Body Pump. And the vision of an entrepreneur named Bill Robertson from Canberra to revolutionize the fitness industry with Body Pump, making it the world's most famous group exercise class. After that came Les Mills Asia Pacific and then Les Mills International. And today, a business that licenses 20 different programs to over 21,000 clubs in over 110 countries with over 140,000 accredited instructors delivering group workouts to over 7 million people each week. Post-COVID, do you have to go visit all these countries, Ryan?
Well, I hope so. Yeah, if I'm lucky enough. I keep trying to organize a business development trip to the Maldives, but that hasn't quite happened yet.
How did you guys even get to 140,000 instructors? That's totally amazing.
It's been a long journey, you know? It's been a long journey. So, you know, what was a... As you pointed out in your introduction, what was a concept in the mid-90s that really exploded around the world, but it exploded around the world through a lot of hard work, you know, a lot of hard work and a lot of people hitting the road and getting out there and waving the flag and building the brand and, you know, doing the hard yards.
I think that's what maybe a lot of people sometimes don't see, the work that goes behind the scenes, because we want to understand what actually is behind the scenes in the fitness world, and, you know, when it comes to the business of fitness.
Sure.
Well, welcome to the Move 8 podcast.
Thank you for having me.
You've spent a substantial part of your career in the business of fitness. Now, how did that happen and what drove you to fitness?
Yeah, that's a good... I say substantial amount as in my whole career, really, in the fitness industry. You know, I was a gym member from when I was very young. That's probably the easiest answer. I fell into being a member of a local health club where I grew up, and you know, group fitness, which in those days was called aerobics, you know, because it was in the kind of 80s and 90s, we didn't really call it group fitness. We called it aerobics or aerobic dance. And that was just something that, for whatever reason, just really gelled with me. Come from I wouldn't say a terribly musical family, but there's a side of my family that music is a big part of it. And I think there was something about the rhythmic nature of exercising to music and being in a large group that really just... It just worked for me. It really gelled. And so one thing led to another. And from being a probably very annoying and very challenging participant to becoming an instructor and whilst studying a business degree. And so that in those days was an unusual combination to have the training skills and a formal qualification in commerce or business. It was unusual. And so, I don't know, it just sort of one thing led to another, you know, and very fortunate, you know, and very... very grateful for the journey that it's been. But yeah, always been in the fitness. It's been great.
That's really interesting that you were kind of moonlighting as an instructor.
Totally, yeah. Total moonlight, yeah.
And can you remember at that time, how much were group fitness sessions? I mean, was it like a pretty hefty sum that you had to dish out every week, you know, if you had to go join a gym?
Oh, as a member, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Look, you know, the context is I grew up in Mexico, so it was pretty affordable and you know, but probably also something that only the middle and upper class did, not too dissimilar to some other developing countries. It wasn't really an everyday man or everyday woman's kind of sport, if you like. Mexicans are big, they're into their sport, right? You know, you play soccer or your football, you play other sorts of things. So fitness was sort of a new thing in those days. You know, this is the mid-90s, right? Mid-90s, yes, it was a new thing. But I think, you know, as the middle class grew and as disposable income grew, not too dissimilar to Southeast Asia, as the middle class grows, it becomes something that a lot more people do and more accessible for them.
And I understand your mom was an academic. She's in which field?
So mom teaches English as a second language. So she's an English professor, and that's how we ended up in Mexico. Was she took a post? So we're Canadian. Both of us born and bred in Toronto, Canada. And mom took a post in Mexico 30 years ago, and actually more than that now, and it's still there. It's a wonderful place, full of wonderful people, with great food, and the culture is extraordinary. It's a lovely place. Ooh,
there's a city called Oaxaca.
Oaxaca. Yeah.
So the wonderful mayor actually came out with a law and banned kids under the age of 18 from buying sugary drinks.
Mexicans, I think, other than people from the United States, are some of the highest consumers of soft drink in the world, Coca-Cola and these sort of products. They drink it by the liter, by the gallon. So that's great. That's a great initiative because it's a massive contributor to obesity and unhealthy habits. So that's good. It's good to hear. I didn't know that. Again, learned something new today.
But this Mexican link is very interesting for me because in those Spanish-speaking countries, music is such a core in their cultures, right?
Everywhere. Yeah.
And one of the reasons why we even got into this Move 8 fitness movement was we were inspired by a video called Foli. And this video, Foli, was all about an African tribe called the Malinka tribe. And in that video, the gentleman says, there can be no movement without rhythm. And that totally makes sense. I think when you think of Les Mills programs, it's all about dance, music, it's fun, it's social, right? It's not even exercise. You've managed to grow the brand in a very lateral way.
I've been in this position for 3 years. Yeah, coming up to 3 years, but involved. I taught Body Pump for many, many years. So as an instructor, I've been involved for a long time. But yeah, music has been, Philip Mills, who's very central in the creation of the Les Mills family, will talk about music being such a central part of what it is that we do. We're pretty obsessed with music and the quality of music. In fact, our music licensing team in New Zealand, we have a whole team that work on music in New Zealand. As we've had to move into creating our own music just due to challenges with licensing, we've started employing recording artists. And as far as I'm aware, our music business in New Zealand, we're the largest employer of recording artists in New Zealand.
That is so amazing.
Because of what we need to produce to be able to distribute all around the world. So yeah, music, and I would say music and quality, and not just quality of music, but quality of product and quality of training is something that as a global business, we're just obsessed with. And that obsession with quality, around, and the refinement of every single piece is what is a big part of what's driven our success.
I think it must all stem down to the DNA of the Olympian as well, isn't it?
You think if you want to perform at that level,
that's right.
You have to be obsessed with quality. Yeah.
And from what I read, I think Mr. Les Mills holds the discus for like 40 years or something. It's a long time to hold a record.
It's a long time.
Over to you, Nikki. Nikki is actually dialing in all the way in KL.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
It seems that you've been in the fitness business and for a very long time. And for Les Mills, you've been driving membership, sales, engagement, and upskilling of your fitness coaches. Recently, Les Mills have taken this virtual fitness to the next level. So I see that you guys have got the Les Mills Plus right now. What are your thoughts on group fitness in the metaverse?
Yeah, it's a good question. And there's probably a few questions in there. So bear with me as I ramble for a while.
Take your time.
So I think digital fitness, we're sitting here at the end of 2021 after almost 2 years of dealing with COVID and all of the various disruptions and challenges and opportunities that COVID have presented itself, right? So we know that in a pre-COVID world, people were in our sector, people were exercising at home. Consumer people's patterns were changing, right? It was no longer that the gym was the be-all and end-all for where you went to consume your exercise. We know that as people were more time poor and that people were, no longer just, especially in larger cities, got to move around, they were consuming exercise elsewhere. And digital plays a big part of that, right? As we know, digital democratizes everything. It makes everything available to everyone, right? Anyone who has access to the internet and to digital devices. So fitness was a part of that, and you know, probably in the last, I would say, I was about to say 10 years, but it probably hasn't been 10 years. Probably the last sort of 6 to 7 years, there's been a huge explosion of digital fitness, right? I mean, at-home fitness is not a new phenomena. Anyone who was around in the 80s would remember.
Or LaLanne.
Yeah, Jack LaLanne. The great Jack LaLanne. Anyone would remember, you know, their parents plugging in a VHS video in the lounge room and doing some step aerobics. I mean, that's nothing new. But of course, digital brought it front and center and, as to use this word again, democratized it, made it available to everyone. As it relates to us at Les Mills, you know, a few years back, we thought, you know, this is something we need to have a look at. We've been in the business of distributing our product or our content through the health clubs for 20 odd years, but we need to have a look at how are we going to go a little wider? How are we going to get more people? You know, our mission, our global mission is we're for a fitter planet, right? You know,
yeah,
we're about getting more people more active and filling up the gyms and filling up the classes, and but ultimately for a fitter planet. So how can we go beyond? How can we help our club partners and our instructors and everyone go beyond the four walls? And so we started investing in a product called Les Mills On Demand, which is now called Les Mills Plus, which is a consumer facing app. And you know, COVID has obviously just exploded it. You know, it was something that we already had in place and we were already driving. And digital is here to stay. I mean, you know, and in fact, we did a recent consumer behavior survey in May 2021. We surveyed over 12,000 fitness consumers all around the world to say, you know, what are your habits going to be like post pandemic? And the majority said, look, I definitely miss my group workouts. You know, I miss being around my friends and I miss being in the gym and in my classes. But I also have got used to and I enjoy the convenience of working from home through a digital opportunity. So, you know, they overwhelmingly said, you know, if I had to choose, I would say I'll spend 60% of my time in the gym and 40% of my time working out on my own. So, you know, that it's here to stay. And the technology, like everything else, is going to grow in leaps and bounds. At the moment, we're talking about, you know, engaging through an app or through your TV or whatever and watching a workout or engaging. You know, the next step will be augmented reality and virtual reality and, you know, closing that gap from the experience of being in the gym or in your third place versus being at home. So I think we're only getting started is what I would say, you know. And if you look outside the Les Mills universe, which we've got players like Apple and Amazon and Google, but Google bought Fitbit, big brands going, we need to get involved in the fitness space. We need to get involved. I mean, Apple's mission is all around health, you know. I mean, this is about making the world healthier. So yeah, I think, you know, it's here to stay. Interesting times, a lot of very disruptive times for those of us that are in the traditional space, but lots of opportunity as well.
I think with Facebook changing its name, that's already like a precursor. That's a milestone, right? Mm. That they're signifying that we're all moving towards the metaverse. So with this huge meta universe where we're all going to be having avatars even, and you could be exercising with Ryan. You mentioned that the tagline is for a fitter planet.
Yeah.
What is Les Mills all about?
Well, we're for a fitter planet, right? So we're for a fitter planet, and how we do that, you know, how we contribute towards a fitter planet or how we work towards a fitter planet is by creating these life-changing group fitness experiences. So you know, to point earlier, you know, we're obsessed with the quality of our classes and we're obsessed with the quality of our instructors that deliver it. And so we really, really believe in the power of exercising in groups, you know, and I, given my background, even pre-Les Mills, I'm with that, you know, that is exercising in a group is what changed my life, you know, and that we use this term. So in the Les Mills world, we have a lot of words that we make up and acronyms and stuff, but we have this term that's called groupness, and it's not a real word. So any people who are any grammar fiends, please forgive me. But the power of groupness, it's that stickiness of being in a group. You know, it's the accountability of being in a group, of turning up to a class with your friends. It's the connection you have with the instructor that's on stage, who's super prepared and is delivering a rock star experience. It's the lift of energy that you get from being around others. You know, and I use an example for myself. Like all of us, I've been through a couple of lockdowns and through these COVID times, and in the lockdowns, inevitably, you know, I've got a pretty good home setup. I've got some weights and a bike and stuff, and so I trained all the way through it. You know, exercise is a key part of my life, lockdown wasn't going to stop that. But the first post-lockdown, the first group workout, and I did the same, very similar workout to what I would do at home, but with a few of my colleagues in a studio, my heart rate monitor and, you know, the way I measure my performance, I worked 30% harder than I did at home. And that is the power of group. That is the power of groupness. That is the collective lift of being around people that are lifting your performance with an instructor in front of you who's driving you to go a little bit harder. Another analogy I can make, the difference between listening to music on Spotify versus going to a concert. Now, the convenience of Spotify is wonderful, right? I mean, I have a Spotify account. account. I do not have any commercial benefit from saying that, but I have a Spotify account. But when you listen to the same song in a concert performed in front of a live audience, that is the power of group. That's the power of groupness, the power of rising tide. So
you just got to move. And it, how we came about as well with this move eight, the number eight, is not just because we're auspicious based or anything like that. The eight actually is an idea that we came up with, where you need eight people to be in your circle so that you can encourage each other to move. And one of the reasons why we came up with this was also because I come from a family where we have a history of type 2 diabetes. I was pre-diabetic. Thank God, since starting all this series of podcasts, I've managed to reverse my pre-diabetes. Thank you.
No mean feat, yeah.
No mean feat, and that's what we want to share. So I think with what Les Mills is trying to do across Southeast Asia and including Guam and also Maldives, I think it's a really amazing thing. Let's say I'm a fitness trainer listening in, right? And I'm thinking, hey, I want to be one of those 140,000. So whoops, how do I get?
And we've trained 140,000 people around the world, actually probably more than that, because that's 140,000 active. So we've trained hundreds of thousands of instructors over 25 years. So I hope I don't come across as arrogant, but we're pretty good at it. You know, we're pretty good at the system we've created is one that we fully believe in. So within Asia Pacific, so if you're listening here in Southeast Asia or Australia, it's a 3-day process that's broken up over a couple of months. So you turn up for your first 2 days. I should say beforehand, you're required to do some pre-work where you get your program material, so your program of choice, whether it's body pump or body combat or whatever you want to do. You get your materials, you learn your materials as best as you can. So there's some pre-work. And then you've got 2 days of kind of immersion, if you like, where you get taught the real sort of basics of what is required to deliver a world-class experience. So after those 2 days, you then go out and you work with a mentor, that someone at your local health club, an instructor at your local health club, where you do what we call shadowing. Wing, which is where essentially you're on stage with the instructor, but you stand behind them and you're just mimicking the movements without actually teaching. And then eventually you move to team teaching, whereas you're sharing the class and ideally your mentor is providing you with feedback, right? So to lift. And then 8 weeks later, you turn up for what we call day three, which is where you put the finishing touches. You get, and you present over the weekend, and day three, you present to your peers a number of times. When I say present, I mean you teach a couple of songs or tracks a number of times to get feedback. And then after day three, hopefully by then you've met the criteria and you've passed your assessment and off you go and start teaching. So it's not easy. And I don't think we're actually quite known for the training not being easy at all.
Right. So you got to constantly update.
Correct. Well, even the 3 days, you know, it's a physically demanding training, but to be expected, because the if you're going to be an instructor, you've got to be a physical role model of what we're expecting. We have very strict and specific criteria that we assess upon, and it is possible to fail. Like, it is possible to not pass the weekend, and you know, some competing brands against us don't do that. Like, you sort of get a certificate for turning up. We pride ourselves in, you know, there is a criteria that you need to meet to be, because you are the representative of our brand in the community, right? But then beyond training, there's constant upskilling. So, you know, our programs, for those that aren't familiar with the Les Mills system, our programs get updated every quarter. Every 3 months, we call them the release. There's a new release. I mean, the instructors, once they're qualified, once they've passed the 3 days, they then need to upskill every quarter by learning the new release and attending workshops and stuff. So, and again, circling back to the beginning, this obsession with quality, that is how we've maintained quality. You know, we've been, you know, we have some of our programs, you know, Body Step, for example, which is sort of a step aerobics program, and Body Pump, our signature barbell program. We're in the, you know, we've done 120 to 130 releases every 3 months, right? So
that's a lot of releases.
My maths are not great, but divide that by four, and that'll show you how many years we've been doing this. And we've not stopped, not one quarter, not even in the middle of COVID. You know, in the middle of COVID,
I'm sure you would have been even more busy.
Yeah, on some levels, but in the middle of COVID and lockdowns, you're like, how do you produce a new release? Mm. We figured it out, right? Mm. And we made sure that we created the content, because we are obsessed with quality. We're obsessed with this idea that we have to update every quarter. We have to make sure that our instructors have the skills that they need to deliver the world-class experiences. We have to make sure that we have the latest moves and the latest music. So our content globally is all produced in New Zealand. And as we are sitting here right now in November, New Zealand's in the middle of a lockdown, right? One of the last places in the world that's still in a lockdown. And they've been in quite a long lockdown, especially in Auckland, which is where our recording studio is. They figured out a way, you know? Okay. They figured out a way in one of the more strict lockdowns in the world a couple of months ago. we figured out a way to create the content and to produce it at a world standard. So yeah, that obsession with quality is a real, real key part of who we are.
Mm. Thanks for sharing that. I mean, there's so much work that goes into just, you know, producing one program. Correct me if I'm wrong. The Les Mills program is basically a program that, let's say if I own the gym, I could subscribe to become a Les Mills program provider. Is that how it works?
We call them partnerships. So you become a partner, right? Mm-hmm. And you partner with Les Mills, and Les Mills comes in, and yes, we license the products, the classes, but that's just one part of the partnership, right? We also will come in and support you in absolutely running your group fitness timetable to a T, right? You know, often health clubs, they're small to medium sized businesses and have a number of different challenges, and group fitness is just one of them. So in a partnership with Les Mills, we really come in and add that value and really make sure that they're running their group fitness timetable to a T. You know, the group fitness real estate in a health club should be the most profitable piece of real estate within the health club because of the amount of people that you can have in there, you know, and turning them around and turning the classes over and over again. So we really partner with our clubs as opposed to just license. But yeah, that's part of it.
So Nikki's actually ACE certified.
ACE, mm-hmm. American Council on Exercise. Nice.
Yeah, I'm ACE certified. I currently sit on the board of Exercises Medicine from ACSM. So for the Malaysian chapter, I'm a board member and as well as the advisory panel for them. So I was just looking to, Les Mills have this mission of a fitter planet. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think ultimately a mission statement or a statement like that, you know, what are you for? A purpose statement really is about why do we do what we do, right? I mean, I'm sure if you've ever come across an author by the name of Simon Sinek, you start with why, right? Great businesses start with why, and great organizations start with why. And I mean, what a more awesome why than for a fitter planet, right? So, you know, it's really about everything that we do, which is we're obsessed with everything we do, which is about fitness. We believe in the power of fitness to really actually transform the planet, you know, and to transform the way we live and transform our health, you know. And fitness is, you know, fitness is one element of health, you know, there's, you know, what you eat and your sleep and all sorts of other things, but, you know, you can't be everything to everyone. And for us, it's all about really creating a fitter planet. And we believe that through the quality of our group fitness classes, whether it's in club or whether it's at home through the Les Mills Plus app or whatever, we can really contribute towards a healthier and a fitter planet. It all comes back to this obsession with quality, right? And to just this obsession with keep moving forward and keep moving forward.
So, you know, Ryan, in Asia, well, let's say in particular, Singapore and Malaysia, we're familiar with brands like ClassPass or K-Fit. There was another one called Guava Pass.
Yeah, Guava Pass, yeah.
So they're all really funky and cool. It gives you the option. What do you think about opportunities like that for the consumer and then also on the flip side for the business?
Yeah, I think they all of these, we would call them aggregators, right? You know, these are great for choice, right? You know, great for consumers that want a choice to give them the opportunity to try different workouts. Great for the facilities, for the studios or the clubs, because they were able to then get access to more people and get more people through their doors. So ultimately, in many cases, it could have been a win-win. I think as well for smaller studios that really wanted to get access to more people but were struggling to do so. I think it was great. You know, again, this is all about democratizing the access to fitness. If ultimately these brands, if they're getting more people more active, well, that's a good thing, isn't it?
Very interesting how, you know, basically everything's now at your fingertips. In future, the business model of gyms, I reckon that's going to be changing quite a bit as well, isn't it?
Yes and no, I think would be my answer to that. I mean, I think the research I quoted earlier, so we did some recent research, you know, in the middle of Delta outbreaks all around the world, so in May 2021, and around, you know, over 12,000 fitness consumers, and what was their behavior likely to look at in a post-COVID environment. And there was still, you know, overwhelming response to, I want to exercise with others. I want to be in groups.
Right.
You know, I want to be around others. And, you know, the group class and the instructor, and this may sound self-serving coming from Les Mills, but it's the answer that we got, was the number one reason why I want to get out and why I want to go and do stuff. So I believe the business of gyms will change that drastically, other than they need to embrace digital. You know, they cannot rely on the four walls anymore, right? You know, that traditionally very bricks and mortar type business, the fitness industry, you know, you get a membership, you come to a gym, we want you to come as many times as you can because that will increase stickiness and you'll stay for longer. But we know now that consumers' behavior is changing. We know that after the last 2 years of almost 2 years of learning how to exercise at home, some of us have become quite good at it. And so the gyms need to figure out, the health clubs need to figure out how to become the distribution channel for that, right? And this is where I really firmly believe, and we believe, that the health clubs can compete against the likes of Apple or Google or Amazon. Because I tell you what, Apple doesn't want to get you into the gym. Apple wants to get you healthy and wants to sell you watches and phones. And Google wouldn't be that dissimilar. But the health club or the gym or whatever can really be that center, right? It could be that we've talked often about it being the third place, right? You've got home, work, and what is your third place? In many countries, the third place is the pub. Or the bars, right? And you know, the gym has the opportunity to be that third place, but they cannot rely on just being a bricks and mortar situation. So if as consumers, our patterns of consumption are changing and we're now consuming fitness digitally, then the gym needs to figure out how to be part of that. Mm. And if they can figure out how to close that loop, how providing an amazing experience in the gym so people want to come back, but also an awesome experience at home, well, then their members don't need to go elsewhere. Right. And closing that loop is where the future. So to come back to your question, I don't think the business model will change that much. It's how you deliver on your promise that will change.
Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, people still need that person to person, that in person.
They want it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is more, you which know, is they, what they need it, but they want it. I mean, especially after being cooped up for 2 years.
And,
right.
And that research was done worldwide?
Worldwide. Yeah. It was all over the world, from North America to Europe to Asia to Australasia.
Which countries are the most active when it comes to fit?
No surprises.
Australia, New Zealand.
Yes. Australia, New Zealand, the United States, the United Kingdom, you know, Western Europe. And that tends to be just the maturity of it. It has nothing to do, I don't think, with culture and has everything to do with the maturity of the fitness industry, right? And the maturity of the fitness industry tends to be, it started in the West, right? You know, it started in the West, it started in Western developed countries and has migrated out from there. However, you know, if you looked at the proportion of population in Southeast Asia that are members of gyms, it's very, very low, right?
Very, very,
like single digits, yeah. But some of our customers, and I was listening to one of them speak very recently, was saying, yeah, that, you know, when you look at it, those percentage points of total population, it's very low. Mm. But if you look at percentage points of populations in the cities, mm-hmm. now there's no data around this,
so urban.
But it's much higher. It's much higher. So urban participation of fitness, of health clubs in places like Kuala Lumpur or mm-hmm. Bangkok or Jakarta, you know, these big, big urban cities, much higher, much higher. It's just that there's no official statistics, right? Whereas in the West, you know, in America, in Australia, New Zealand, there's official statistics because there's bodies that are collecting this sort of information. So I suspect over time, as the fitness markets develop, there'll be better data. I believe that in Southeast Asia, particularly in the urban areas, that actually the representation is much higher than people think it is. But the potential for it to grow is to move out from the urban centers and to go out into the country.
That would be lovely. Hmm. That would be lovely. I mean, can you imagine like some makcik in a kampung in Kuala Lumpur dancing away to Les Mills workouts, you know, with the instructors coming from New Zealand? Ideal world. Hopefully we can make it happen. Is there like an annual convention?
Well, so pre-COVID, yes, we used to get together. So our Les Mills family, if you like, or the Les Mills team. So as I said, hundreds of staff members all around the world, 140 odd thousand instructors, plus a team of trainers and presenters and educators. And yeah, we used to have a global gathering.
Uh-huh. Would that be in New Zealand or?
No. Have done them in New Zealand. Done them all over the place. New Zealand, as geographically, is a bit tricky for people to get to. I mean, it's fine for us here in Australia, but not so good for people in Europe. And we have a big, big community in Europe, big, big, big community in Europe, not just in Western Europe either, like all across Spain and the Netherlands and Germany and Eastern Europe and stuff in the UK. Big, big, big community of instructors and trainers. So, and then, of course, a massive community in North America. Right. You know, North America, the United States is the biggest fitness market in the world. So no surprise there. So we used to get together a couple times a year, once in Europe, typically somewhere where we could make lots of noise and have big, busy classes.
Yeah. So, tell us about that. I can imagine it's like some huge mega party, right? Like how many people would you have had at one time?
It's in the hundreds. The last one we did was at a resort somewhere in Southern Europe. I can't remember where it was. It was at a resort because we need the ability to make noise because we all all get together and we exercise together, right? That's a big part of our creed, is to get together and exercise. And yeah, it was fantastic. So there, one in Greece and then one typically in North America, mm-hmm. off the back of one of the big American trade shows. And, you know, these events, bringing the team together, I mean, it's just quite extraordinary, especially after 2 years of not being able to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've gone digital, of course, you know, yeah. online events and conferences, and they've been great for keeping people engaged. But yeah, we're really looking forward to getting back together. But beyond that, we also around the world run these events called Les Mills Live. Mm-hmm. And
tell us about that.
Yeah. So Les Mills Live is really about bringing the brand to life, right? Bringing the brand to life for our instructor community, for our team of 140,000 instructors around the world. And so Les Mills Live would typically be over a couple of days, wherever we would run it. The last one I was involved with was in Singapore, actually, in March 2019. And people who create the programs are mostly based in New Zealand. So we would bring in the program directors, as we call them, the people that create the programming. We'd bring them in from New Zealand to Singapore for 2 days, and they would basically teach and upskill our instructors over 2 days. So the last Les Mills Live at Marina Bay Sands in Singapore was great.
Ooh.
And we had 2,200 instructors over the course of 2 days that came, and some consumers as well, but mostly instructors. And I've got a very vivid memory of it. We were running Body Combat, which is one of our signature programs that across Southeast Asia in particular is very popular. And we had there's two program directors that put together Body Combat, and they were teaching. And we had 1,200 people in the class.
Wow.
And, that is
how do you do a 1,200 people
in a big room? In a big room.
It's a huge ballroom, I would imagine.
Big room with big lots of screens and a big stage. And if I circle back to this concept of groupness, now, if you think of me coming out of, when I shared my story of coming out of lockdown and exercising with two of my colleagues and how that lifted me by, say, 20 to 30%, imagine doing it with 1,200 people, right? With
Crazy.
The perfect music and, you know, the amazing, like, it's just something that really brings the brand together. So, you know, I would encourage your listeners or your watchers, if you ever see an advertisement for a Les Mills Live around you, wherever you happen to be, you know, look it up, because it's a wonderful experience, right? and something that, you know, unfortunately we haven't been able to do for the last couple of years, and we've probably still got some time ahead of us before we'll be able to do these confidently. And
well, I certainly hope you'll be planning one very soon, because Nikki and I will be hopping on a plane and maybe meet
Front
you
row.
In Guam or Maldives.
Well, I don't think we'll be doing them in the Maldives or Guam, but, you know, certainly somewhere in Southeast Asia and also Australia. You know, mm-hmm. we've got a huge, huge community of instructors here in Australia.
Yes.
And yeah, we look forward to those big gatherings are a real part of the stickiness of our brand. And we're so very, very excited to be able to do those again.
Why do you think Australia and New Zealand is just so good at fitness programs? Seriously? I mean,
I've given this thought. Yeah, I have given this some thought. So I think you got to think about it culture and history,
yeah,
right? You know, because that influences everything. So Australians and New Zealand, Antipodians, which is a very fancy word for a Friday afternoon.
Well, there's a nice cafe in KL called the Antipodian.
It's there. There you go. I'll have to check it out next time I'm there. Big, big sporting culture, right? And really, sport, and as a North American who comes here, and sport is part of what we do in North America, but it's not as ingrained in culture as it is here. From being a child in Australia, New Zealand, you know, you're running, you're swimming, you're playing footy, you're kicking a ball, you're throwing a ball, you're in a pool, you're diving, you're always active, and I'm generalizing, because of course there's segments of the population that's not true. But sport, you know, sports on the TV, you go to the footy, you go with your father, you go with your mother, you go with your uncle, you go with your mates, you know, you're and male, female, it's all very, very equal. So I think the fact that sport and which then translates into physical activity is such an ingrained part of culture here, that the fitness activity is an extension of that. And that concept of being fit and being healthy and everything that includes is really ingrained in culture. And that's something that I think is different to other cultures that I've experienced around the world.
I was actually looking at the Olympic medal tally, you know, just recently, and New Zealand contingent was one of the largest contingents, actually, from New Zealand. Such a small country, more than Australia. And I think they came home with quite a lot of medals. Australia did very well.
Very well.
Thank you, Ryan, for joining us and trying to make things happen in this world where we're trying to make the planet much fitter.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you. Thank you.